Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily lives. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hello, I'm Ruth Amos, your host, and it's great to have you here with me on A Quiet Life. It's actually really great to be back. This is episode 39, and as I record this, it's Wednesday the 25th of September 2019, and I've had a bit of a break since July in doing the podcast, and I'm so happy to be back with you, chatting with you again. It's good. It's amazing how much I've missed doing this. So I've recorded a whole heap of new interviews, and I've got few more lined up for me to record, and we're going to have some absolutely incredible stories coming your way, so I look forward to sharing them with you. And today is one of them. Obviously today's guest is Greg Foote. Now Greg is, he should be retired. I think he says in the interview that he's 77, so that's, you know, really you'd think, but he's actually working part-time but as a minister at my church, which is St. Clement's in Kingston, which he also talks about. So just to, you know, clarify a few things towards the end of the interview, yes, we both go to St. Clement's. It's an Anglican church. Our senior pastor is Pete Adlam, and he's great, and Greg enjoys working with him, and so we talk about that as well. But there's so much else to talk about with Greg because he's had such a full life, and when I look at his life, you can, as you just talk through it quickly in our little interview time, you can see how neatly the dots in his life join to produce something wonderful. So how God's used all of the different jobs that he's done through his life to prepare him for the next one and the next one, and to prepare him for what he's doing now. And I thought that was pretty fantastic. I think when we're living our lives, we live forwards, not backwards. So you can't look back and join the dots until you get to the end of your life. And I muse on that a bit in my blog this week. So if you don't read my blog, you can find it at aquietlifeblog.wordpress.com, I think. Or you can go to, probably easier, go to ruthamos.com.au and then click on the blog tab, and then that'll take you there too. Or you can sign up for my newsletter at ruthamos.com.au, and the blog will come into your inbox every week. And the reason why I'm saying all this is because part of what I did in my break was think about, now how am I going to get this to work well together? And one of the things I thought I'd do is each week when I write my blog, I will write something that pertains to the podcast for the week. So the two things are going to fit together. So you'll hear me thinking about something that I talk with my guest about on the podcast. It might be, you know, only very loosely related to the podcast, or it might be very tightly related to the podcast. But yeah, so that's what I'm going to do. So podcast and blog go together now. And so if you subscribe to the podcast, you'll have it, you know, in your iTunes or in your other podcatcher every week. And then if you subscribe to the blog or to my newsletter, then that will come into your email inbox and they'll fit together. And I hope that that's helpful to you, and I'd love to hear whether it's good or not otherwise. So let me know. So yeah, this week in my life, well, it's really funny because I do actually write notes for this rambly bit. Although it might seem that I don't, but I do write notes. And last time I talked to you, one of the things I had written for this week in my life was, Jess is coming to visit. And guess what? This week in my life, Jess is coming to visit. So I'm very excited. It's school holidays coming up next week, and Jess is coming to spend some of that with us. So that'll be very, very cool. She's my daughter. She lives in Canberra, in case you don't know. She's an English teacher in Canberra. Very proud of her. Our son still lives at home, and so it'll be really nice to be family again together. And my husband, Moz is also a school teacher, so he's got holidays and Jess has holidays and I'm taking holidays. So again, last time I talked to you, I said, I'm taking a break. Well, I was taking a break from the podcast. This time I'm taking a break from everything, which is very exciting. However, I am restarting the podcast. So what I'm hoping to do over the next 2 days this week is to pre-record a couple of podcast introductions and get everything set up and scheduled so that you get the podcast over the next couple of weeks, even though I'm lying back and sipping goodness knows what drink and chilling out. Obviously, I've planned my holidays really well. I don't even know that I know how to take holidays anymore, so I'm going to give it a try. But yes, yeah, so this week's absolutely insane as I try and squeeze everything in so that I can take a couple of weeks off. And I'm really looking forward to having the break and seeing what that entails. So I look forward to that. Another thing that's happening this week is I'm launching a book, but I'm really quietly launching it because I just don't have time to have a big launch party in any way, not even a big online launch party this week. I can't figure out how to do that. So I might have a post-launch launch later on, but my book, Small Town Trouble, which is under my other author name, RJ Amos, has been launched and you can order that from Amazon or any of the ebook places or drop me a line and order one if you would like. I think it's a really fun book, not highly spiritually uplifting, but just a lot of fun. I don't think it's bad for you spiritually, but it's just a lot of fun. It's a novel about a person who moves to Tasmania from Melbourne and gets to live in a tiny country town and come to terms with what country town life involves, and, you know, including things like cows and dogs and spiders and all those kind of things. And she also uncovers some dodgy business that she has to sort out. So it's fun. It's a fun book. Anyway, enough of the ad for the fun book. We're going to chat to Greg, and Greg is just such a lovely, warm person, and I think that you will really enjoy our conversation today. So here it is. Today's guest is Greg Foote, and I first met Greg when I was in grade 12, I think. Well, I may have before, but I don't remember. But when I was in grade 12, taking part in the World Vision 40-hour famine bus tour. So we all got on a bus. So there must have been 30 of us or something like that.
At least.
We travelled around the state for the whole 40 hours, collecting donations through the snow and down the windy East Coast, feeling quite ill.
Without eating.
Without eating. And we finished, I think we finished by eating KFC, which is really probably the worst way to finish a 40-hour fast, but memories, we have memories. Mm. And Greg is now an associate pastor at our church, and he's a great blessing to us. And Greg and Anne have 3 grown-up children and 7 grandchildren, some of whom are also pretty well grown up.
Indeed. The youngest is 10, and I had the great privilege of marrying, doing the ceremony for my oldest granddaughter's wedding a few months ago, which was wonderful.
She's 24. Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. So we'll start where we start. How did you become a Christian?
That was a long time ago, the 40 only a few years. How did I become a Christian? I was privileged, Ruth, to grow up in a Christian family. My mum and dad were both very committed Christians, and they basically lived their faith. And there's an old saying that, you know, God doesn't have grandchildren.
Yeah, that's
true. I had to work it out for myself. And thankfully, I managed to do that. And I think it was the age of 13. I made a commitment to follow Jesus, and I was baptised in the Margaret Street Church of Christ in Launceston by the minister, who at the time was a person, man by the name of Jim Wright, who later became my father-in-law. But that's another story. So that's how I came to faith.
So does that mean that you grew up in church with Anne? Or?
No, well, sort of. We didn't actually know each other all that well in those years, and I was a couple of years older, so she would say that I wasn't interested in a lot of the things she did. But it was only after she'd moved to Adelaide and then came back to be bridesmaid at a friend's wedding in Launceston that we sort of connected, as it were.
So 13 is still reasonably young. Did you have a time in your adult life where you thought, I have to draw the line here? And was there a time where...
There was a time when I drifted away, probably during some of my university days, where I was still attending church, but still not on a regular basis. And I had some questions and I was searching around. I didn't actually pursue my faith actively in those years, but it was after I'd finished university and became more of an adult person that I managed to figure out that yes, that was the right decision, and I wanted to commit the rest of my life to being a follower of Jesus.
So your first career type job was as a teacher, am I right?
You're right, and a reluctant teacher, because I'd finished a four-year degree in mathematics, and because I'd done an honours year, I thought that some firm would buy out my education department bond. They'd paid for me to go through the university. So I had to teach for 4 years, and I reluctantly, and I thought, you know. But the department, in their wisdom, sent me to Turina High School, which was a great blow to my pride, because I thought with an honours degree I should at least go to a college. But it was the best thing that ever happened. I went to Turina High School. I was mentored by extremely good teachers there, the principal, the deputy principal, and my head of maths department. And I found out two things, that I loved teaching, and B, I was okay at it as a mathematics teacher. And sadly, there's mathematics teachers are in short supply today, but I walked in front of my first class in 1964 with no teacher training, and I still see some of those students today.
So you did your undergrad maths degree and honours, and then they just said, heck, you can
and
teach.
And I did a diploma of education while I was teaching. That's why I benefited so. I was blessed by these mentors who were so excellent in showing me the ropes. But I loved it and made a career of it.
Fantastic. Awesome. So you were at a public school?
Always at a public school. And I don't want to denigrate private schools, all of which do excellent jobs, and particularly Christian schools, but I taught my whole career, 25 years in public schools, and we sent our three children to public schools because we wanted to. I didn't feel I could teach in a public school, have my children going to a private school. That did not a good look.
But in a public school, you can't openly share your faith. Did your faith show in that sort of position?
In those days, people were more... The things happened in school, like we used to have prayers in assembly, and we'd even say the Lord's Prayer, we'd sing a hymn in assembly. But in personally, my faith as a teacher in a public school, I think, showed itself in the way I tried to treat students. I always tried to give students a respect and treat them in the way that I wanted to be treated, and particularly the... In Jesus' words, the least of the least, if you know what I mean. And there are a number of students I can think of that I've worked with over the years. One of whom comes to St Clement's now, a disabled lady who was one of my students. And I tried to make sure that these students were given every opportunity, and also that as a teacher I was modelling what a Christian should be in that environment. For example, I never ever used corporal punishment, and I spent 12 years as a deputy principal in a big high school, which is normally the sort of henchman role.
Swishing
the cane. Didn't have a cane in my office. Never used it. And at one school I led a campaign to abolish corporal punishment at that school because it was prevalent, and I felt it was bad. It was discriminatory. It was only ministered to boys, and usually physically small, low intelligence boys. So I led a campaign to get rid of the cane, and the staff voted by 60 votes to 2 to get rid of the cane. And that school was a better place. It was a more humane place as a result of the... And this, I felt, was an outworking of my faith and my belief in the intrinsic worth of every person as being created in God's image.
Yeah,
however
absolutely.
Bad they might seem in the eyes of the world or however difficult their background was. But
yeah, because it's just so much better to I want to use the term discipline by relationship, which I'm sure many people don't understand, but just coming alongside and saying...
Exactly, and people who I meet now, they said there was... I've often heard them say to me, there was something different about you as a teacher, and I think I probably know what that was, in that I didn't discipline in the normally accepted ways, and I think I managed to achieve what I wanted by being who I was and respecting, giving students the kind of respect that I expected from them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome. So what was the journey to go from teaching to World Vision?
Interesting. We started after we'd had our third child in 1973. Anne wanted four children, and she said, but the doctor said no. She'd had a tough time having the third one. And so we decided instead that we'd adopt a child from Vietnam. It was just there were a lot of Vietnamese families and kids up for adoption after the war. That turned out to be an administrative nightmare, so we didn't get that down to that. So we sponsored the child from World Vision in the God That Strange Way. 1974 this was, started sponsoring for World Vision. That ended up us being World Vision voluntary reps in Tasmania, sort of being a bit of a clearinghouse for material, doing an odd speaking engagement. And in 1988, when I took long service leave, I did some work for the World Vision office here as a volunteer, and that was the year before we went on that bus trip.
Right.
And that ended up in the Melbourne head office in Melbourne saying to, we want to start an office in Tasmania, and we want you to be the first state manager.
Wow.
So I prayed long and hard about this, because people were saying to me, look, you know, you're at the top of your career, you're a deputy principal, you've been acting principal for 18 months, you could do A, B, C and D. I was only 46. But I felt God was calling me out of this after 25 years, and so I made the break. It was a step in faith, because in those days you could not preserve your superannuation, couldn't take it with you.
Oh.
But God's hand was in it, because I had leave without pay with working for World Vision for 5 years. From the education, they gave me leave without pay for 5 years, and then they brought in preservation of superannuation. So
wow.
I resigned the day after they did that, because I wasn't going back.
No.
And continued my career with World Vision, which was probably, you're off looking back, you can often see God's hand in these things. You pray at the time, you think you're doing the right thing, but looking back, it's probably one of the best, most greatest blessings God's ever given me, for to go and join World Vision. The depth of that organisation, the wonderful Christian people that you meet there, that from all right across the theological and denominational spectrum, it was just such an enriching time, that 11 years I had with World Vision.
Absolutely. Do you have some stories that you remember from that time?
Oh, endless, you know. Over the 11-year period, you've cut me down here because there's time restrictions, but over the 11-year period, I was privileged to do 5 overseas trips. World Vision ran the 40-hour famine study tour, you may recall, which Qantas sponsored one student from each state to go and experience World Vision's work firsthand at the coalface, and a number of our staff were reluctant to be chaperones for these tours, but I was always the first to put up my hand, because I was a teacher and I loved being with students, and we'd select the cream of these people, one from each state, and so we had some great times with them. But I can recall things like going to a remote village in Africa and an old man presenting me with a bag of tomatoes as a gift.
Wow.
Which, of course, you can't refuse.
No.
And I later took, I was later told that this was a week's wages for him.
Heavens.
You know, that is humbling.
Yeah.
And then another time we were in the Philippines, and we landed at some remote island, and we went then by a truck bouncing along on this hard flat tray truck to a remote project, and then we had to walk in the hot sun for 2 or 3 Ks to get there. the furthest you can imagine from civilization, what was the first thing they gave us to drink?
Coke.
Absolutely. Coca-Cola, with all their marketing brilliance, could get into the far corners of the universe, the world, the earth, but they didn't have clean water.
Yeah.
To drink.
Yep.
You know, and there's a story in that. And so many, many times we've just been blessed and humbled by the experiences that I had. I remember walking along a flood levee in Bangladesh with a young 16-year-old. He'd had to evacuate because of the floods. Mm. His family were in the process of setting up home in another place. They didn't have a lot. I said, what's your ambition? She said, I want to be a doctor.
Wow.
You know, and I thought, wow. I don't know what happened to him, but we've sponsored a number of children over the years, and it's so satisfying to see that they grow to adulthood and then are able to make a life for themselves because of the support. World Vision is about giving people a hand up, not a handout, and working with what they've got. You know, I can remember sitting on the ground in a remote village in India in the dirt and watching our community development person helped this community decide which was the best way forward for them.
Mm.
In other words, using local resources, local leadership.
So important.
Very few times do you see expats working in World Vision projects. It's normally local leadership and empowering and developing that, which is the way to go.
That's really encouraging to know.
So I'm still, it's nearly 20 years since I left World Vision. It seems like yesterday. I still talk about we, but I'm still passionate about the work that World Vision is doing. Mm. That doesn't mean they're any better than other agencies. We all have our faults and our foibles, but it was a wonderful and still is a wonderful organisation to be part of. Yeah. Very privileged.
I guess it's better to do something with a few faults than to do nothing at all.
Exactly. I think Mother Teresa might have said that. Anyway. Yeah.
Do you get frustrated with the church back here that they don't do as much as they could?
No, because I'm aware that churches have to, you know, look after their own communities first, but I'm absolutely excited about the advent of St. Clement's work with MPART.
Yes.
Because that's right near dear to my heart. And I had the privilege of leading a couple of teams to India in 2014 and 15 to see the work of MPART. And if you're part of a church that is involved with overseas development and supporting Christian mission and ministry in those places, then if you can, I'd encourage you to go because it's life-changing experiences. You know, nearly 50 people have gone from St. Clement's now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a wonderful time. Yeah.
And just to, I mean, again, with MPART, as with World Vision, you're working with the people on the ground. So we're not...
Exactly.
We're not going in, setting something up and leaving or whatever. We've got a long-term relationship with these people.
And we see their transformation centres in which they're training their own pastors to pastor in their own communities. Mm. In India, of course, they wouldn't allow expats to work.
No, that's true.
I remember one guy saying to me once, you stay here longer than 1 month, government will start to ask questions. But with MPART, and the thing that's so good about MPART is that with the right-wing Hindu government being so tough on Christians now, that it really is hard. We've lost some workers who paid the ultimate sacrifice. Mm. And we talk about persecution of Christians in the West, but... seen nothing compared with what they have to endure. You know, houses being burned and people being attacked. And it's not good.
Mm.
But we keep going because God is faithful.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Mm. So the latest thing that you're doing is working as an ordained minister. Did that come directly out of World Vision? Or
No. There was a fair gap. Like, I left World Vision early in 2000. And didn't do much for a while. Anne said I had the cleanest car in Hobart. After that was retiring from full-time work. I was only 57. That was the average retiring age for Australian males in 2057.
Oh, wow.
A bit higher now. Mm. So I went, decided, all right, I'll go back and do a bit of relief teaching. At the end of 2000, I'd done a little bit of relief. Wasn't all that wrapped in. You couldn't choose which schools. so that I'm not going to that school again. But I got a phone call from Gary Hills, who was just at the end of a long and successful time as principal at Ogilvie High School.
He was my principal.
Gary Hills, a legend at Ogilvie.
Yeah.
And he said, Greg, there's a bunch of classes here that have had about 7 maths teachers this year. They need a bit of sorting out. So I went out in third term and tried to sort them out. Look, cut long story short, I ended up staying there for 4 years, 2001, 2003, 2004, teaching maths to bright girls, which was a dream for me as a mathematics teacher, 2 or 3 days a week. You know, it was just lovely.
Perfect.
Then at the end of 2004, they offered me a job as a project officer for the school's building redevelopment, which everybody thought was a huge joke because I can't even drive a nail. But my job was to liaise between the stakeholders, you know,
that's
the
right.
staff and the architects and the builders, and keep the peace and do that I could do.
People management,
yeah. Wasn't building the new development. So after that was only 1 year, and then I came back home again, and Anne said to me one Saturday, there's a little ad in the paper. She said, you could do that. I said, what? She said, it's chaplaincy support officer with Scripture Union.
Oh, yes.
God has strange ways, you know. So
I forgot about the
Scripture Union took me on, and I worked for Scripture Union, and that again, I think, was God's timing, because just after I'd started, we've moved house from Blackmans Bay to the unit we're now in. Mm. We're unpacking our boxes, and I get a call to say that John Howard has tipped a bucket full of money into school chaplaincy.
Yes.
So I'm thinking this is a nice little retirement job with about 19 or 20 schools to look after with chaplains in Tasmania. It goes from there to about, I think now there's about 80 to 100 schools with chaplains in Tasmania. But God has blessed that ministry, and it was a miracle to me to see how the ministry of school chaplaincy has now become an accepted part of the education environment in public schools.
Mm.
And we have some wonderful, I keep on we again, I've been gone from Scripture Union for nearly 9 years, but we had some wonderful people whom God raised up. People who say, we're going to get all these chaplains, and he says, God will find them.
Mm.
He did.
Mm.
And still some people that were employed back there when I started, still doing school chaplaincy and the wonderful ministry in schools.
So if you want to hear more about that, I had an interview with Ruth Pinkerton as well, talking about how she came down here expecting it to be a quiet little
scripture,
and then suddenly...
Ruth arrived shortly after I did. I remember her saying at one SU retreat we had shortly after she came, who's that old man over there in the corner? it was a pleasure to work with Ruth, and she was God's person for the time.
Absolutely.
As I believe humbly that I was too, because I had this entree into schools,
yes.
being known in schools.
Yeah.
I heard one principal say, oh, if Greg says this chaplaincy's okay, it must be all right. You know, they're a bit suspicious about these religious people coming into schools. But in terms of spirituality and helping kids explore what the meaning of life is, I think they got that bit all right.
Mm. It's interesting, isn't it? Again, as you look back, you see all the dots being joined. Mm. I love... talking to people who can look back and say, here are, and then I like also talking to people who are looking forward and they don't know what the dots are yet, but you know,
well,
you
Ruth
just keep
Pinkerton
moving forward.
Was a dot, and I think she and I working together were dots being joined at that
absolutely.
Time. It was a good time.
Cool.
And then it was time to go, and you asked me about ordination, so I left that in 2010, and that time I'd been going to St. Clement's for 2 or 3 years, and Pete had me doing a little bit of lay preaching and here and there, and he came to me and said, would you consider going down the path of ordination? So I went away and prayed long and hard about that. And really, I think that's another example, looking back, that God was calling me to use the gifts that I had in service in some way.
Mm.
And so I was ordained 2 months after my 70th birthday.
Nice.
Lovely present by John Harrower in St. David's Cathedral in December 1, 2012. Yeah, and it's been a great time. I've learned and grown. You think you're never too old to learn, and the older I get, the less I know. And working with people like Pete Adlam and yourself and everyone at St. Clement's has been a blessing to Anne and me, because we were just getting a little bit sort of tired, is the word I think, and it's been a reawakening. God has blessed us both spiritually, and I hope we've been able to be a blessing to others through that. So whilst I have the capacity, I think we'll keep going. We'll see what God's got in store.
What's next?
I did a review with Pete recently, and he said, "What's the future?" And I said, "Well, only about 3 years I'll turn 80. Maybe time to have a review then, but we'll see what God's got in store." And that's the beauty of it. You know, God knows what the future is. I don't, and I'm very happy with that. I'm just happy to continue.
Fantastic. So when do you feel close to God?
Good question. I feel close to God when I'm studying scriptures, particularly in preparing sermons, and I'm conscious of God speaking to me and directing me in certain ways. This might seem odd, but I feel close to God when I'm out in the remote roads riding my bike, and you can just stop and sit by a river and reflect, as I often do. Snug River is one of my favourite spots. So those two times are the most. One should feel close to God when reading His Word, and I do that. And that's the time when God really speaks to me, I think. But I'm open all the time. I'm conscious that it's a constant sort of conversational relationship thing, that God's speaking to me, and I'm aware of His guiding me. So, but those two times are the times I feel most close.
Yeah, absolutely.
It used to be running in the bush. We can't run anymore, so cycling.
I was thinking, you're one of the fittest, I was going to say older people I know, but you're one of the fittest people I know.
Appearances can be deceptive. I think God has blessed me with good health. Put it that way. It probably isn't altogether accidental. You have to work at it. But I'm not obsessive about it. My wife might say I am, but she's fairly fit herself.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's one of those things that you just tend to take for granted, but you shouldn't, because it's a blessing, it's a gift.
Cool. So what's one thing about God or Christianity that you wish everyone knew?
Oh, good question. I think what I would say is I wished everyone could be aware that God's the message of Christianity is the only thing that gives meaning and purpose to life. You know, we've been looking at the book of Ecclesiastes today, where everything's meaningless and kind of, but the book of Ecclesiastes ends on a positive note. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. And I wish everyone could understand that the creation, fall, redemption, renewal is the framework in which gives everything meaning. And that's the first thing I wish everyone. The second thing I wish everyone knew is the uniqueness of Jesus as Lord and Saviour, that I am the way, the truth and the life. None of the other religions did God come to earth as a person that you and I can relate to, you know. And that's the second thing that I wish everyone would come to see and understand.
Awesome. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
Oh, lots of things, but I can't think what they are. As I said, I'm not all that fussed about talking about myself, because it's not about me. It's really about God having blessed me in terms of family and career and in what I'm doing now. And, you know, sometimes I even have to pinch myself that I'm at a church like I'm at, which is so. There's someone new to our church recently that's described St. Clement's as being like a theme park. And he meant that in a positive sense.
Yeah.
But there's always something happening. There's always something new. There's always something refreshing. And there's there's such a range of people that it's so stimulating. And I'm just happy to be a tiny little cog that helps keep going. But I think Pete and I have been blessed to have each other. And selfishly, he's a bit like my son, who's my best mate. And he's in ministry in the States, and he's only a year younger than Pete.
Yeah.
And we just relate so well, Pete and I. It's a similar kind of relationship.
Which is so neat.
It is. It's God ordained, I think. And, you know, I had, if somebody had said to me, you know, back in the early 2000s, you're going to become an ordained minister, we laughed, laughed in their face.
Yeah.
But God's got a sense of humour. He takes me from a nonconformist tradition and introduces me to the tradition. Says, you're going to be an ordained pastor.
Yeah.
But we're all pastors, we're all ministers, yeah, priesthood
absolutely.
Of all believers.
Yeah.
And you know that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's been really awesome talking to you, Greg.
Oh,
thank
good.
You very much.
I hope it's been helpful, and thank you for making me feel relaxed as I reluctantly talk about myself. But yeah, I hope you can get something of it that will bless people.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I am sure I will.
Good.
Thank you.
Good.
Wasn't that such a great chat? I heard him say we're all ministers, we're all the priesthood of believers. I hope that you're encouraged by this talk with Greg to minister to other people around you this week. Next week we'll be talking with Amber about living a Christian life when you have a mental illness, and also how those of us who don't have a mental illness can help those people who do to get through life better. I want to thank Catherine Joy from Joy Music House for the music. And thank you, Matt Dobson, for the transcription that you do of each of these interviews. And I want to remind each of us to rate or subscribe to this, especially on iTunes. If you can go and leave a little star rating, that'd be helpful. Or share it with a friend who you think might find it helpful. And I will be chatting to you again very soon.